Welcome to Season Ticket, everybody. I'm your host, Chris Gasper. It's Wednesday, January 17th. We have a great guest for you today, the one and only Peter King from Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. He's nice enough to join us over the telephone. Peter, how are you doing today?
Chris, great to be with you. Thank you. I'm doing very well.
Excellent. Well, let's start off here with the AFC Championship game. I think it's a game that not a lot of people anticipated at the beginning of the year, certainly not back in August when the Patriots and Jaguars opened the exhibition season against each other. I don't think anybody was thinking that was an AFC Championship game preview. How do you see this game going, and do you give Jacksonville any chance here of dethroning Bill Belichick and Tom Brady?
Oh, I give them a chance, no question, Chris. I think they're basically a mystery team in these playoffs. Leonard Fournette, I think, is the big X factor in this game. He's a fascinating player. And if you watch the first 20 minutes, which I'm sure you did, of the game against the Steelers, you looked at it and you basically said, this guy, I'm not saying he's unstoppable, but he's very, very potent. I think he's the most important single player. I think he's the kind of guy who Bill Belichick, like with Marshall Faulk in that first Super Bowl and with great players since, is probably going to focus on and say, we're not going to let this guy beat us.
Yeah, I mean, that would make a lot of sense. And you know how Bill is, having covered him for all these years, that he would look at and say, we're going to make Blake Bortles beat us. And there's no question, when you look at Blake Bortles, that he has had to deal with a lot of critiques, a lot of criticism, a lot of slights this year. Yet he has guided his team to the AFC Championship game. But does he have enough to go into Gillette Stadium and beat the Patriots when Bill Belichick and that Patriots defense are basically daring him to do it?
I can't see it. I mean, I'm not saying they won't win the game, but I can't see Blake Bortles being the key factor in them winning the game. It's hard to have a lot of trust for him. I think he's a strange player because there are times when he'll make two or three good throws in a short period of time, and then there are times when he'll overthrow receivers in the flat. I think he's an impossible player to predict in this game, but I don't think he's going to play great. The key for Blake Bortles, I think, is the same key for Nick Foles in the NFC game, which is don't turn it over. Don't throw interceptions. You know, if he throws interceptions, it's all over. And his history this year has not been to throw interceptions. So I don't trust him to make positive plays, but he hasn't been making a lot of negative plays either.
Yeah, he's been a pretty good game manager here and during this playoff run for Jacksonville. And there have been, frankly, lesser quarterbacks, in my opinion, Peter, who have come in here and won. The guy I always think of is Mark Sanchez. My nickname for him is Off the Mark Sanchez because he just was not an accurate passer when he was with the Jets. Yet he took the Jets to back-to-back AFC title games in 2009. And 2010 and came in here in 2010 and played really well, threw three touchdown passes and beat the Patriots. So it's not unprecedented.
I think that's a good lesson for the Patriots to remember this week. I think it's a really, really interesting team to prepare for because you would think, okay, Bortles, Fournette and everything. And then you look at their defense, and this was a team that was plus 31 in the regular season in sacks. In other words, they had 31 more sacks than they allowed. And I think that says a lot both about your offensive line being pretty good, and it says an awful lot about your defense. And so I think Sanchez was the same way. The Jets, the biggest win, you know, the playoff win, that the Jets had over the Patriots. That was the game where the Jets had 9 defensive backs active for the game. And Rex Ryan, I thought, did a phenomenal job of basically saying, okay, we're going to rush just a few. We're going to rush like 3, and we're just going to keep everybody back, and we're going to clog your traffic lanes. We're going to do a different thing than you expect us to do. And that really helped them in that game. But in this particular game, I think it's going to be similar. I think the Jaguars are going to try to rely on their defense and their running game to try to win. And often this year, it's been a good formula for them.
Yeah, and they're great at taking the football away. During the regular season, they were second in the NFL in turnovers forced with 33, and they have 8 defensive touchdowns on the year, including Telvin Smith's touchdown return of a fumble by Ben Roethlisberger last week against the Steelers in the divisional round.
Roethlisberger, ball, pop three, rolling around, and it scooped up the speed of Telvin Smith. Goodbye! Touchdown, Jaguars!
I think they would need something like that, Peter. When I look at Jacksonville, what's interesting is that they have a lot of the components that have given Tom Brady issues in the past. They can get after the passer. They were second in the NFL in sacks. They can do it from the interior with guys like Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell. They have fantastic cornerback play with A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. They have really speedy linebackers, guys who can run. And then also you have the Tom Coughlin factor. I know he's not on the sideline, but it seems like he's had a real effect on that Jaguars organization. So how much do you buy into each of those components that Jacksonville has in terms of beating the Patriots?
You know, I never know what to think about the Tom Coughlin factor. I think this comes down to the fact that 12 months ago, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, hired a coach who is as much like Coughlin as anybody he possibly could have hired. And so I look at Coughlin as having a, and Doug Marrone is not a mini-me, but I look at having a Coughlin guy as the coach of this team. I remember going to their training camp, Chris, in August, and, you know, Coughlin told me that day, he said, we will be able to run the ball. I think he was, frankly, disgusted by, you know, when he looked at the Jaguars on tape at how soft they were in the running game. And, you know, he was going to make sure that that was not the case, and that certainly hasn't been the case. Starting from September, the Jaguars have been a formidable running team.
I want to switch gears a little bit, Peter, and ask you about sort of the friction that has been reported to exist between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. And we had the Seth Wickersham story sort of detailing that and saying that Jimmy Garoppolo was at the center of that. But you also spoke with Robert Kraft, a story you had on the MMQB in which he denied one of the key parts of that story, which is Seth saying that there was this meeting that was held a couple of weeks before the trade deadline where Belichick and Kraft talked about Jimmy Garoppolo's future. And in the story, Seth says Belichick walked out of that meeting with the mandate to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. Robert Kraft told you that was a total fabrication and fiction. When you look at that story and what's going on there, what do you think's really happening in Foxborough? And what do you think really happened with the Jimmy G trade?
I hate to say this, Chris, but I wish I knew. And I think one of the things that happens in a case like this where you have quite a buttoned-up organization, and then you have a story where, you know, sources, you know, inside the organization paint this picture, I give Seth Wickersham credit in this regard that I don't have those sources that say that there was this incredible discord. And I'm not saying that there isn't discord. I'm just saying that I can't document it. I can't prove it. And as a journalist, if you can't do that, you just say, okay, there are these reports out there. Here's what one side says. Here's what the other side says. And you're going to have to believe what you want to believe. And in this particular case, you know, I got a very, very adamant, very strident Robert Kraft on the phone on on a Friday night, and he basically was as adamant as he was during Deflategate with me. I think he felt in this case that most people, when you look at this, they were, you know, they were probably going to think that there was a lot to this. And in his mind, I mean, he said it over and over again that it's just not the case. So I think now you have to look at it and you have to say, well, let's say, for instance, that there is something there. I think my first reaction and what I wrote the day that this story broke is that, you know, I'm amazed this has lasted 18 years for a lot of different reasons. But strong, powerful people, it's hard for everybody to exist at the top level of their profession together for 18 years. You know, we always think of Eddie DeBartolo, Bill Walsh, Joe Montana as the gold standard owner, coach, quarterback, and in many ways they are. But they lasted 10 years. It's hard for a generation to stay great, and that's going to be, to me, the legacy of the Patriots, because I think they're going to all be together next year. It'll be at least 19 years, and let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's just say 18 years of, to me, the greatest combination of owner, coach, and quarterback in NFL history. It's remarkable.
You said you think they'll all be together next year. You've known Belichick for a long time. There were some rumors coming out of New York, Gary Myers, fantastic reporter, saying that the Giants had interest in him for that coaching job. You covered Bill when he was with the Giants with Bill Parcells. You were at Newsday. Do you think he would ever leave the Patriots and go to the Giants? He's 65 years old. This might be his last shot at that job.
I mean, first of all, I don't think so. It just probably isn't in the cards. Kraft told me categorically he will not be trading Belichick. And B, John Mara has hired Dave Gettleman. Dave Gettleman, has made it clear in the interviews with the people he's done, from what I've heard, that he is the voice on personnel. Well, I don't know how that would fit with Bill Belichick. He's been the voice on personnel for 18 years, so I doubt that's a possibility.
All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, we'll have more with Peter King from Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. We're going to ask Peter what's going on with the coaching carousel and where do Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia fit into that carousel. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, subscribe to us on Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, back now with Peter King of Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. Peter, wanted to ask you about the coaching vacancies around the NFL. I know this always gets held up a little bit because of what's going on with the playoffs, and you have candidates like Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator of the Vikings, who is playing the NFC title game, so you can't announce that he's gone anywhere. And obviously closer to home here with Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels. Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels, both of those guys definitely gone?
It looks like it to me, Chris. What happens in cases like this at the end of the season is that it's the worst-kept secret in football. but... there's probably a reason right now why Mike Vrabel is aggressively trying to get the Tennessee job. It's because he got beaten out by Josh McDaniels for the Indianapolis job. And I'll tell you, this season, if you think about it, of coaching searches is really one of the greatest examples of the legacy of Bill Belichick and what the Patriots have done. So let's go over all the vacancies. All right. In Detroit, the search is being run by a Belichick disciple, Bob Quinn,
yes,
who is going to hire the Belichick defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia. In New York, the search is being run by Dave Gettleman, who's not a Belichick disciple, but he's a Boston guy, has incredible admiration for the Patriots. And they interviewed both Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels. In Indianapolis, the nominee and the coach in waiting is Josh McDaniels, who has obviously learned at the right hand of Bill Belichick and coach Tom Brady. And in Houston, where there was some doubt, the power struggle was won there by a former Belichick coach, Bill O'Brien, who now will get the power in that organization. In Arizona, a guy who nobody even knows, Brian Flores, gets an interview for the job with the Arizona Cardinals for that vacancy. It's amazing. Every place that had an opening, everyone has tentacles of either candidates or people making, oh, we forgot John Robinson in Tennessee, a Belichick guy. I did a podcast with him last year, and I asked him about Belichick, and he talked about Bill for 10 minutes. And now it looks like that Vrabel could be, and he will be, as Albert Breer has said, he will be a very strong candidate in Tennessee.
Yeah, that makes
every
a lot of sense.
Every opening here, everyone
that's unbelievable.
Has a Patriots story.
I just have to say this little story quickly, Peter. I think it was 2008. I was at the scouting combine in Indianapolis, and I was talking to a then Patriots scout, and he said, keep an eye on Brian Flores. He said, this guy is going to be the next Mike Tomlin. So NFL people have had their eye on this guy for a while. You know, I know that he is not someone who's even been a coordinator yet. I mean, he's been here in New England. He's done special teams. He's done safeties. Now he's doing linebackers. But it wouldn't really be that big of a shock to me if he ended up with an NFL job without being a coordinator in his career. So that it could be a ton of turnover here for the Patriots when it comes to that coaching staff. Speaking of Mike Tomlin, though, I want to ask you this, because you wrote about this today in your mailbag. There is some agitation, I think, in Pittsburgh, the way the season ended. There was a report out there on Pro Football Talk that some of the limited partners of the Steelers would like the Rooneys to take a look at Mike Tomlin as the coach and whether he should move forward as the coach. I tweeted the other day after they lost to Jacksonville, Peter, that the Steelers are one of the worst situational football teams I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That being said, Tomlin has an outstanding record in his 11 seasons as Steelers coach. Is there any way the Rooneys would move on from Mike Tomlin?
I can't see it. I haven't talked to Art Rooney, so I don't know factually. But all you have to do is look at the Steelers' history. Three coaches in 49 years.
That's amazing.
The one thing that the Steelers do better than anybody in football, I'll never forget whatever year this was, they were coming off a 6-10 season with Bill Cowher. And Dan Rooney announced a contract extension for Bill Cowher. And the fans in Pittsburgh were all over Cowher. They wanted him out. And so I remember talking to Dan Rooney about this, and he basically said, Peter, that's not how we do things here. We show faith in our coaches, and usually that faith ends up paying off. And so what happens? They sign him to his extension. Steelers go 15-1 the next year, losing the playoffs, but then the following year, win the Super Bowl in Detroit. And, you know, so that is what everybody in this Rooney family is going to point to. And I have no doubt that Mike Florio's story is correct, that there will be some limited partners who say this. And Art Rooney, I will guarantee you, will say, thanks for your input. This coach has won 48 games in the last 4 years. The only team in football that's won more is the New England Patriots. And thank you very much. We're going to work on getting better. Now let us go about our job. Because understand, the limited partners in Pittsburgh, even though nobody, including Art Rooney, owns 50%, owns the majority of this team, when you buy into the Pittsburgh Steelers, you don't buy in with any authority over the football operation. You basically are an investor in the team, and you get a nice seat at the games. But you don't have any authority. You don't have any real input other than to give your advice. And Art Rooney is going to listen to their advice, I'm sure. And he's going to say, we're not going to make any changes because that's not what we do. You know, but I also recognize exactly what you say, Chris. I thought, you know, you can look back on the Jesse James reversal, which people in Pittsburgh will probably cry about for years. And I understand that everybody would be upset about that particular play, okay? But think of the other two plays, to me, the idiotic plays of the Steelers in that series, just after that happened. A crossing route to Darius Hayward Bay. They got no timeouts left, and he can't get out of bounds, and the clock keeps running. So now it's third down, third and goal from the 7. So they either have to spike the ball, go for a field goal, or they have to hurriedly, without really thinking about it, try to throw a ball in the end zone and get a touchdown. And so what do? They throw a ball in the tiniest of windows that's intercepted. And so now not only do they not win the game, they don't even get to go to overtime to have a chance, to have a 50-50 chance to win the game. And so to me, that reeked of unpreparedness, okay, of Todd Haley really not being prepared to deal with that situation. And that, to me, I mean, if I were to guess right now, I think Todd Haley's getting fired. And I think that there's going to be an emphasis on being more organized on offense and probably a more disciplined team altogether.
Yeah, they need that. I certainly thought the Steelers really underachieved. I mean, if you're talking about pure talent and just balance between offense and defense, I thought they were the most talented and most balanced team in the NFL. And to not even reach the AFC title game, I think that's a massive, massive underachievement by the Steelers. Great stuff there, Peter. Let me ask you about the NFC title game. You were obviously in Minnesota for the Minnesota Miracle. You got the number one and number two seeds, Philadelphia and Minnesota. And like we all predicted, it's Nick Foles versus Case Keenum for the NFC Championship.
I wish I could say I have great feeling about the Philadelphia Eagles or the Minnesota Vikings, but I don't. I like the Vikings a little bit better. But the Eagles playing at home, the Eagles playing outside, it's supposed to be a pretty nice day, actually. It's supposed to be in the 40s without precipitation. So that's very, very lucky for the Vikings because now the Vikings have obviously, even though they're from Minnesota, they're a dome team. They're used to playing in warm weather. And so the way the winter has been in the Northeast, they're getting a gigantic favor. In my opinion, in a game that's probably going to be played above freezing and probably without the weather being a great factor, at least from the forecast that I saw today.
When you look at the NFL Final Four, do you see a trend or is this just an anomaly in terms of defenses? You know, we always talk about, or I always talk about, Peter, it's a quarterback league, but it's really just Tom Brady in terms of established quarterbacks. And then defensively, you're looking at all of the teams are in the top five in scoring defense, including the Patriots, who are fifth. And then when you look at total defense, the Jaguars were second. The Vikings were number one. Philly was fourth. The Patriots were 29th. They give up a lot of yards. Is this just a one-year outlier, or do we see a trend here where maybe we need to shift our focus from just who the elite quarterbacks are?
Total absolute outlier. You know, we're two plays away from this being Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, and Blake Bortles.
Good point.
And you know, and how hard is it to imagine that despite how poorly Pittsburgh played on defense from Ben Roethlisberger being in this game, I mean, they put up 42 points. So I guess overall what I would say is that, A, it's an anomaly. B, I think that it just shows that every guy who runs a draft this year is going to say to his scouts, now here's why this draft is so important. And he's just going to talk about all the players who, this is what I would do, all the players who got to the Final Four, you know, in the NFL and where they were picked. You know, Stephon Diggs, miracle play, fifth round pick, four, I think 14th wide receiver picked in 2014. Tom Brady, 199th pick in the draft. You know, the Jaguars have a bunch of down-the-line guys. They got a bunch of prominent guys, too, but they got a bunch of down-the-line guys. And then, you know, if you were to just look at, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles and how they're built, you know, Howie Roseman, I think, is, you know, gets too little credit for using every way possible to build his team. And, you know, you look no further than their offensive line, which has been a really, really good offensive line. And they lose Jason Peters, and they're still really good. So this, to me, when I look at this Final Four, I look at front offices that did a really good job and provided depth to their teams so that they could survive some very difficult tests late in the year.
We'll get you out on this one, Peter. I think a lot of people probably know, although maybe some do not, you are a big Red Sox fan. You grew up in Connecticut. What do you think of the Red Sox offseason so far, and do you think they need to spend big for JD Martinez?
You know, I don't know. I just think that nobody saw this Giancarlo Stanton thing coming. And when you see that, and then when you see how hamstrung the Yankees are going to be if they can't dump Ellsbury on somebody, I just, J.D. Martinez scares me if you have to pay him whatever they're talking about, what, $22 million? I don't even know what it is.
The rumor is Boris is asking for 7 and 210, 7 years, $210 million.
And that's, you got to say no. You just have to say no. And again, you like him as a player, but, I mean, is he going to have a position? What do you do with Hanley Ramirez? It's just, he's not the greatest fit. And I actually thought that it was a good thing that Dombrowski said no to Hosmer, because it sounds like Hosmer wanted $1 jillion. And Hosmer's a good player, but, you know, I just think this. In baseball, when for the first time what you spend really matters, and it really matters because of this luxury tax and all that stuff, and instead of just saying, Nesson will foot the bill or whatever, I mean, at some point, you got to be responsible. You have to start, you know, you have to realize that the reason that these Red Sox are good is that, you know, they drafted Mookie Betts, they developed him, and they let him play. And I am not in any way, if they don't sign J.D. Martinez, I'm not going to think, oh, my God, lost year. I don't. I mean, baseball's a weird game. And sometimes when you least expect it, you go the farthest. So we'll see what happens. But I think that you get in trouble when you pay for one really hot season for a good but not transcendent player.
All right. Well, Peter, always great to talk to you. Always a real pleasure here. That's Peter King of Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. You know where to find him online, themmqb.com. He's also the host of the MMQB podcast. Peter, it's so great to talk to you. I wish you still lived in Boston. It was nice running into you and your dog, but great to talk to you over the telephone.
Hey, Chris, good being with you. Good luck. I'm really glad you guys are doing this podcast. I listen to it occasionally, and you always have good guests, and it's fun to listen to.
Thanks, Peter, and enjoy the AFC and NFC championship games. We appreciate you stopping by on Season Ticket.
Thanks.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll catch you tomorrow.